Let's have a look at bird flu now. Poultry producers and wildlife organisations are still on high alert after confirmation the H5N1 bird flu has now reached native Australian bird populations. The detection of the virus in a native greater crested tern found at Robe on South Australia's limestone coast has been described by authorities as a concerning development. The total number of bird flu detections in Australia now stands at 13. Meanwhile, a dead juvenile fur seal found on the New South Wales central coast has tested negative to the virus, but concerns remain about the broader threat to wildlife. Dr. Beth Cookson is Australia's Chief Veterinary Officer and joins me from our studio in Cairns this morning. Dr. Cookson, welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Oh, good morning, Sally, and thanks for having me on the program.
What's the latest data? What sort of picture is it painting for us?
Yes, Sally, so far there have been 13 detections of H5 bird flu, all in wild seabirds found in coastal locations. On Friday, we of course had the first confirmation of H5 bird flu in a non-migratory species, the greater crested tern there at Robe in South Australia. The efforts at this stage continue to be on determining whether there's been any onward spread and any sustained transmission within Australian populations of birds. Our advice at this stage is the risk to human health remains low. There's no evidence of mass mortalities in the area, and we haven't got bird flu in our poultry or broader agriculture systems.
Beth, the spread of this virus from a migratory bird to a native species here in Australia, physically, how is that likely to have happened? What are the ways in which it can go from one bird to another, particularly when they're different species, they're not all nesting or gathering together?
Yeah, the H5 bird flu is highly infectious. It's spread through mucus and respiratory secretions or through the faeces, including in contaminated environments. So, of course, these seabirds occupy the same sorts of coastal ranges that we've detected the bird flu in the migratory wild species that have previously tested positive. So whilst we don't know exactly how this transmission occurred, there's certainly possibility that those birds are coming into contact with one another during their normal behaviours in those coastal locations.
The government has described the spread to native species as a concerning development. Will we see the national response scale up, hit another level now that we have this data?
I would first say that the response is already in action. What we have been focused on and will continue to be very focused on is determining whether there has been any onward spread and sustained transmission within Australian populations. That response so far has looked like increased surveillance, and I really do want to acknowledge the community's response to supporting us with that by reporting sick and dead birds through the Emergency Animal Disease Hotline. That's allowing jurisdictions who are the lead of the operational response to appropriately investigate those. So far, there have been more than 300 negative investigations, which is also starting to build the picture of any additional virus spread, and more than 5,000 reports via the Emergency Animal Hotline and other channels. So that's a really important part of the response at the moment. The other areas of effort are on the ground through those operational agencies in making sure that organisations, communities and individuals are aware of what to look for and what to report and able to manage the risk to themselves to help to manage the response operations on the ground.
Do you and other officials have access to computer modelling on how the virus may spread from this stage now?
We've certainly engaged a variety of different experts, including wildlife experts, on the locations where we might expect there to be greater risk of spread. That includes locations where there are greater congregations of wild birds and other animals mingling together. And, of course, we're also concerned with the potential for spread to our agriculture industries, in particular poultry industry, so locations where there are are water reservoirs and the like, where we get large congregations of waterfowl in close proximity to poultry, would be a key area of focus. I do have to emphasise at this point, though, we are still looking at the picture of 13 individual seabirds in coastal locations. So we're absolutely tapping into the right expertise to inform our understanding of the risk.
As the number of detections continues to rise, what's the current advice for the poultry industry? Has it changed at all?
Our Consultative Committee on Emergency Animal Diseases, which is our main technical committee overseeing the response coordination, on a Friday week ago did recommend enhanced poultry biosecurity measures, just given the uncertainty of the situation whilst we continue to undertake the surveillance to better understand the situation. So that advice includes making sure that the poultry industry is looking at the biosecurity measures, their biosecurity planning around those facilities and putting in place precautions to prevent poultry coming into contact with potentially contaminated water sources or feed, as well as preventing contact between birds and poultry and wild birds. That has included a recommendation for temporary and voluntary housing of outdoor poultry for the current period whilst we continue our investigations.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast. My guest is the Chief Veterinary Officer, Dr. Beth Cookson. Some wildlife carers in WA have raised concerns over a lack of protective clothing and funds to support the response in the West. Are volunteers and local vets on the front line getting the support they need?
We have been preparing for quite some time for H5 bird flu to arrive. That's included more than $113 million of investment to support that preparedness, including guidance and information for wildlife carers and for veterinarians. It's also included some investment for the jurisdictions to undertake their frontline response operations. Now, that has included in Western Australia and other locations where these affected seabirds have been found, providing information for wildlife carers and veterinarians. And for those that are being asked to participate in the response and support those jurisdictions, I understand that there are some personal protective equipment and sampling equipment being provided where they're able to. Otherwise, the advice to wildlife carers and veterinarians is to stay up to date with the information, to look at their biosecurity planning and where appropriate, be able to put in place infection control and triage. Of course, the situation does continue to evolve, and we are very conscious that there have been concerns raised about the level of preparedness of the sector. So whilst our immediate priority is ensuring that surveillance, reporting and response activities can occur safely and effectively, we are continuing to work with wildlife organisations and other stakeholders to understand the operational needs.
Dr. Beth Cookson, thank you very much.
Thanks, Sally.